Hello, it's Saturday, November 3rd, 2007, and I'm Eric Hufschmid. I've never voted, and I'm always being reprimanded by people who do. I tell them that we should demand better candidates, but they insist that we have to vote for one of the candidates they give us. Most people have the attitude that we're helpless to change the situation. This same feeling of helplessness is occurring with 9/11, when I tell people that we don't have to be victims, that we can beat this crime network. Almost everybody responds that the network is too powerful. So I thought I'd explain my views about this mysterious power that the crime network has, and why we're not helpless. To begin with, have you noticed that animals are afraid of everything they don't understand? When they hear strange noises or smell something unusual, they run. They don't investigate the situation, and they don't face problems. Animals react to strange situations by immediately running away. An animal will face a threatening situation only if it is trapped and cannot run away. Next, consider how similar human children are to animals. Children are easily frightened by dark rooms, loud noises, and strange situations. A child's natural tendency is to run from danger and hide from it. Finally, consider adult humans. Although most of us, especially men, consider ourselves to be brave and courageous, our natural tendency is also to run away from potentially dangerous situations. Crime gangs have known for a long time that people have this tendency to run from danger, and so they try to create the impression that they're much more dangerous than they actually are. The crime gangs want even their own members to fear them, and they want the police, government officials, and the rest of us to fear them. They accomplish this by conducting vicious beatings, rapes, tortures, and murders. Next, consider that when an animal feels trapped and threatened, many of them try to make themselves appear more dangerous than they really are. For example, a cat will try to make itself appear larger in size, and they make noises and show their teeth. The behavior of a frightened cat and other animals is similar to the wizard in the movie The Wizard of Oz. The wizard was trying to create the impression that he was a beneficial entity with abilities beyond that of an ordinary human, whereas the frightened animals try to create the impression that they're incredibly dangerous and violent. Animals and humans run from danger, and animals take the advantage of this characteristic by trying to appear frightening when they are frightened. Humans do the same thing. For example, when an organized crime gang discovers that one of their members has turned on them, they might torture him to death in an incredibly vicious manner, thereby creating fear among the rest of the members. Humans and animals are easily manipulated with these frightening situations. The Zionists behave just like the other organized crime gangs. They take advantage of our tendency to hide from danger by creating the impression that they're a mysterious, dangerous, and powerful group that cannot be identified, understood, or beaten. They are like the Wizard of Oz, except that instead of trying to impress us, they're trying to frighten us. They want us to fear them and hide from them, not stand up to them. They frighten us in a lot of ways, such as by having lots of agents all over the world who tell us scary stories about how the people behind 9/11 and other crimes are a mysterious group of satanic, vicious, and murderous people with superior intelligence, incredible wealth, and a mysterious substance that is referred to as power. They also frighten us with stories of how this mysterious group of super criminals is going to put electronic chips under our skin, and that they'll send teams of mindless federal agents to our houses to put us into prison camps, where we'll be tortured, raped, and eventually killed. The Scholars for 9/11 Truth, Alex Jones, and the other Zionist agents have lots of frightening stories, and they never provide solutions on how we can get rid of this Zionist crime network. Their only advice is to buy guns and live in fear of the mysterious federal agents who will soon be knocking on our door. Now that we're about to have a presidential election, they're also telling us to vote for Ron Paul, although they don't claim that this will solve the problem. The Zionists are taking advantage of our tendency to hide from danger. They create the impression that their crime network is much more dangerous than it actually is. And they have been very successful. There are millions of people around the world who are too frightened of this crime network to talk about 9/11, including grown men in the police and military. Millions of people are also afraid to criticize Israel or discuss the issue of whether Israel has a right to exist. Animals and humans are cowardly. Our natural tendency is to run from danger, not face it and deal with it. This allows people to be manipulated very easily. You can see this with the Italian gangs from decades ago. Some of those gangs had a few dozen members, and the larger gangs had a few hundred members. That's not a large group of people. But those tiny gangs would exert a tremendous influence over a large city by frightening the citizens, policemen, and government officials. If anybody showed any bravery by standing up to the gang would kill him in a brutal manner, creating the impression that nobody is capable of standing up to the gang. However, this is just an illusion. Of course, an individual person cannot defeat a gang, but a police force could easily deal with the criminals, and so could a city with millions of people in it. We don't have to live in fear of organized crime gangs. The gangs only appear powerful because most people run away from them, which leaves behind the few brave individuals standing alone and defenseless. Those few brave individuals will then be killed, creating the illusion that nobody can defeat the gang. But if the citizens and police were not so easily frightened, the gang could be eliminated quickly. The Zionist crime network is much larger than the Italian gangs, but their power is also an illusion. For example, the Rothschilds are considered to be a powerful family. But what power do they have? Imagine the entire Rothschild family standing naked in front of you. What would you see that's different from other human bodies? Would you see more muscles? Would you see wings that allow them to fly like a bird? Would they have X-ray vision like Superman? What exactly is different about the Rothschilds? Why do they have power but not you? What is the source of their power? And why can't you or I acquire the same power that they have? The only difference between you and the Rothschild family is that they have a lot more money. Money appears to provide people with power, but it's just another illusion. Money is an intangible object, like rocks or flowers or fish. Would you describe a person with a lot of flowers as powerful? What about a person with a lot of fish? The reason money seems to give people power is that most of the human population will do almost anything in order to acquire money. But before I explain that any further, it might help you to first understand how a person with fish could be described as powerful. A person with an enormous amount of fish would be able to manipulate thousands of circus seals. From the point of view of the seals, this man would be much more powerful than you or I. The seals would ignore us, but they would do whatever that man with the fish wanted them to do. However, it's not accurate to say that a man with a lot of fish is a man with a lot of power. It's more accurate to say that he can use his fish to manipulate certain animals, such as seals. Now consider how the Boys Town Orphanage in Nebraska is similar to a Rothschild bank, and how the boys in the orphanage are similar to the money in a bank. The Rothschilds can use their money to manipulate certain people by offering them money. People describe this by saying the Rothschilds have power over government officials, policemen, and professors. However, the Rothschilds don't have power over any of us. Rather, they're simply using their money to manipulate the people who are willing to behave like a circus seal. The people who manage the Boys Town Orphanage can also influence government officials, news reporters, professors, military leaders, doctors, judges, and policemen by offering them sex with the boys. For those of you who are new to this issue of the Boys Town Orphanage, one of the boys from that orphanage, Paul Benassi, said that he and other boys were often sent to parties in Washington, D.C., where Barney Frank and other government officials would use them for sex. You can also find reports in Britain of people using orphans for sex. This behavior is not exclusive to Americans. Now, we could say the Boys Town Orphanage has power over government officials, policemen, professors, and lawyers, but it would be more accurate to say that the orphanage is manipulating the people who are willing to behave like a circus seal. Now consider the dilemma that a government official faces when one of the Rothschilds offers him money in return for a particular government policy, and at the same time, a manager at the Boys Town Orphanage offers him sex with a boy for a conflicting government policy. What will the government official do when he has to choose between money and sex with a boy? Who has more power, the Rothschild family or the orphanage? The answer is, it depends upon the government official. Some officials would rather have sex with a young boy, and some would rather have money. Before trying to make sense of this, consider yourself. Imagine that one of the Rothschilds offers you millions of dollars in return for your assistance with some crime, and a manager at a Boys Town Orphanage offers you free access to the boys for a year in return for helping them with a different crime. What would you do when you were provided with those two offers? Would you ask each of them for more details about the crimes they want you to commit? Would you want to visit the orphanage and take a look at the boys before you made a decision? Would you take one offer or both offers? The question you should consider is, which group of people has more power over you, the Rothschild family or the Boys Town Orphanage? Hopefully, by now, you realize that the correct answer is that nobody has power over you. If you choose to commit a crime in order to have sex with orphan boys, it's not because the orphanage has power over you. It's because you want to have sex with boys, and you agreed to do whatever they asked of you. Likewise, if you commit a crime in order to get money from the Rothschild family, it's not because the Rothschilds have power over you. It's because you want their money, and you were willing to do what they asked. Nobody has any of that magic substance that we refer to as power. The only difference between us is that some of us have lots of money, and some of us have access to orphans, and some of us can offer jobs in Hollywood movies. And there are some fishermen who have lots of fish. If everybody in this world was respectable, then nobody would use their money or orphans to manipulate other people into committing crimes, and nobody would be willing to commit crimes simply to get some money or sex. Unfortunately, an enormous percentage of the population, perhaps the majority, will manipulate other people when they have the opportunity, and an enormous percentage of the population is happy to behave like a circus seal in order to get some money, sex, a job in a Hollywood movie, or tenure at a university. You can see this manipulation during the elections also, but political candidates offer us promises instead of fish or money. They promise to reduce taxes, or improve the school system, or reduce the size of government. And some offer to stop the war in Iraq. However, once these candidates are elected, they rarely carry through with their promises. Most voters react by becoming angry with the candidates, but they continue to vote for them anyway, or some other candidate, in the next election. The voters are worse than circus seals. A seal would stop performing if he was given only promises of fish. The people who vote have such a poor ability to think that when a government official doesn't fulfill his promises, the voters just complain. Imagine if circus seals behaved like voters. Imagine watching a seal perform his act, and at the end, when he doesn't get a fish, he has a tantrum. And then the next day he performs again, and when once again he doesn't get his fish, he just has another tantrum. And imagine this cycle repeating over and over, year after year. Well, that is what the voters are doing. I've been reprimanded all my life for not voting, but when a voter reprimands me, it's equivalent to a circus seal who never gets a fish reprimanding another seal for refusing to perform in the circus. Imagine that seal saying, "But we have to perform the tricks. We don't have any other option. They have power over us. Well, the politicians don't have power over us, and we don't have to vote for any of these crummy candidates. We could face the fact that the election system doesn't work well, and we could be discussing how to improve the election system and the government. We could be trying to improve life for ourselves rather than behaving like stupid, frightened animals. Most people have the attitude that they're helpless and that certain people have power over them, but we're not helpless, and nobody has any of that magic stuff called power. Bill Gates doesn't have any power, and Warren Buffett doesn't have any power, and Michael Chertoff doesn't have any power. These people only have a bunch of circus seals who are performing tricks for their money. Some people have complained that I'm some type of cult leader and that I have power over people, but I don't have power either. All I do is express my opinions. This brings up a very important issue. I'm not manipulating people with money or offers of sex or offers of tenure at a university. I don't have a horde of circus seals performing tricks for me. I only express my opinions, and people listen to me only if they truly want to. Most people ignore my opinions, but some people think about what I say. They may not agree with everything I say, but my opinions cause them to think, and that causes some people to change their opinions, and some people also change what they're doing with their lives. This creates the illusion that I have power over some people. But it's their own mind that altered their thoughts. I didn't do it to them. This brings up an interesting question. Who has more influence over the future of the human world? A person with lots of money? Or a person who manages an orphanage? Or a person who assigns jobs for Hollywood movies? Or a person with intelligent opinions? A person with lots of money can manipulate almost everybody, whereas a person who manages an orphanage can manipulate only a small percentage of men. A person who assigns jobs for a Hollywood movie can manipulate a significant percentage of the population, but not as much as a wealthy person. And a person with intelligent opinions can influence only a small percentage of people who enjoy thinking. It would seem as if a wealthy person has more control over the world than anybody else, because a wealthy person can manipulate more people than anybody else. However, you can't judge a person's influence over the world by the quantity of people he can manipulate. Consider a person who has an enormous quantity of fish. He could manipulate millions of circus seals, but he would have no influence over human life. Somebody like me, who influences only a tiny percentage of the population, would seem to have no significant influence over the world because there are so few people who are affected by what I say. However, take a look at who is influenced by me. Many of the people who are influenced by my opinions are people who enjoy thinking and doing things. They're not the mindless people who sit in front of a television set for hours a day, or who spend their time playing games or gambling or getting drunk. The people that I influence are the people who are involved in determining the course of human life. Therefore, someone like myself, with no money and no orphanage, can potentially have more influence over the world than the wealthy people. Furthermore, I influence people. I don't manipulate them. And that is a very significant difference. It might help if I summarize the differences between a rich family, such as the Rothschilds, and a person with intelligent opinions, such as myself. The Rothschilds can manipulate billions of people with their money. But of what significance are those people? How many of them actually affect the future of the human race? By comparison, I have influence over people who can think and get things accomplished, and they have much more influence over the future of the world than the people who are easily manipulated by money. The Rothschilds must continually provide money to the people they manipulate, or those people will revert to their original condition. Those people are like circus seals who perform tricks in order to get a fish. So if they don't get their fish, they'll stop performing the tricks, or they'll turn to some other wealthy person. the Rothschilds have to do a lot of maintenance to maintain their horde of human circus seals. By comparison, I don't have to do anything to maintain the influence I have over people. If I stop producing opinions, I simply don't influence people with any new ideas. But the people will not revert to their original condition. My opinions cause permanent changes inside people's minds. In order for the Rothschilds to manipulate and maintain their horde of circus seals, they need a large team to maintain the flow of money to the people that they're manipulating. By comparison, I don't manipulate anybody, so I don't need a team to help me maintain the influence I have over people. I can do this by myself, in my spare time, and at almost no cost. If the Rothschild family were to be killed, all of their manipulated people would revert to their original condition, and the Rothschilds would cease to have any effect over the world. Killing that family would end their manipulation. By comparison, if I were to be killed, I simply wouldn't be able to influence people with any new ideas. The people who have already been influenced by my opinions will remain influenced, and my opinions will continue to spread to other people even if I'm dead, thereby influencing people in the future. My opinions may be influencing people centuries from now. Christopher Bolin is still influencing people, even though he disappeared mysteriously and appears to be kidnapped. Even if his kidnappers force him to produce deceptive material, his original information is going to continue influencing people. His kidnappers cannot undo the effect he has already had on people, and they cannot prevent his information from affecting people in the future. To summarize all of this, don't be fooled into thinking the Zionist crime network has power, or that the Rothschilds have power, or that the Boys Town Orphanage has power. They can't manipulate any of us unless we choose to become their circus seal. I think the Zionists are encouraging this attitude that wealthy people have power and that we're helpless to stop them, because they want us to believe this idiotic theory to make it easier for us to be manipulated. I can see this with my own father. When I tell him that we shouldn't vote for any of these crummy candidates, he responds with a typical argument that we have to vote for one of them because the rich people have so much power that we can't stop them. Where did my father get this theory that the rich people have power? He didn't create this theory. He picked it up from television, magazine, books, and other Zionist propaganda. He doesn't have the internet, and he doesn't know how to use a computer, so his view of the world has been shaped by the Zionist publications and television. He's convinced that he's a helpless victim of rich people, and there's absolutely nothing we can do because those rich people have so much of that mysterious substance called power. When I told him that all we have to do is refuse to take their money, he said that people don't have the ability to refuse money. Well, I think we do have the ability to refuse offers. At least some of us have that ability. Unfortunately, we may be in a very tiny minority. It's entirely possible that the majority of humans are too much like animals to avoid the offers. They may be, just like that expression implies, talking animals. Animals don't have any ability to control their cravings for food, sex, or fighting. It's possible that most people really are so similar to animals that they will never be able to properly control their cravings for money, sex, or fame. In such a case, the wealthy people, the orphanages, and the Hollywood movie directors will continue to manipulate the majority of people until we do something about these talking animals and the people who manipulate them. An issue related to this issue of power is the widespread belief that large amounts of money will cause us to become corrupt. But this is nonsense. This is equivalent to saying orphans will corrupt people, or that alcohol turns people into alcoholics. There are a lot of us who can be around orphans without ever raping any of them. Some of us can even have free and unlimited access to alcohol without ever getting drunk. And some people can be wealthy without becoming corrupt. It's not the money, alcohol, or orphans that's causing problems. It's the people. In 1887, a British government official supposedly said, "Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely." I suppose he was looking at world governments, and he noticed that the leadership was terrible, and so he assumed that after a person acquires that mysterious substance called power, he becomes a badly behaved person. However, once you realize that power is just an illusion, that statement doesn't make sense. That statement is equivalent to saying, access to orphans tends to corrupt, and absolute access to orphans corrupts absolutely. Top government officials certainly do seem to be very strange people, but it's not because a government position converts a wonderful person into a strange person. It's because the type of people who get top government jobs were strange to begin with. There are lots of homosexuals and pedophiles in the Catholic Church, the daycare centers, the Boy Scouts, and the elementary schools. This is not because those institutions are turning normal men into homosexuals or pedophiles. It's important that you understand that you are responsible for your behavior. Because if you don't understand this, you're likely to become a victim of the Zionist crime network. The Zionists are looking for people who have trouble controlling their desires, and they make the situation worse by encouraging us to believe that we're helpless victims who don't have control over ourselves. If we burglarize a house or steal a car, they tell us it's not our fault. It's because of society or poverty or ignorance. If we lose our temper, it's not our fault. Somebody made us angry. The Zionists don't encourage us to be responsible for ourselves or consider the effects of our behavior on society. Instead, they encourage us to follow our emotions. As I look back at my life, it was around 1970, when I was a teenager, that Americans were bombarded with this philosophy that we should do whatever makes us feel good. The media would expose us to such philosophical questions as, what is the sense of living if we don't enjoy life? We were told that happiness comes from experiencing pleasure, and we experience pleasure from money, sex, food, fame, parties, and drugs. We were told that in order to enjoy life, we must do whatever pleases us. Women were told that their female ancestors never enjoyed life, because they were forced to obey their fathers and husbands, and that every woman should start enjoying life by following her emotional desires and doing whatever titillates her. Now that I'm aware of Zionism, it seems that the Zionists are responsible for creating and promoting this philosophy because they want to break down society and relationships. If all humans were to truly follow that philosophy and do whatever titillates us, we would behave exactly like animals. The Zionists are not influencing the world with intelligent opinions. They are manipulating people with money, sex, drugs, and fame. They're not an intelligent organization that is going to take the human race to a more advanced level. They're a group of abusive, selfish criminals who have been causing horrendous suffering for centuries. The police are frightened of them, the military is frightened of them, and most people around the world are frightened of them, but they're just a bunch of disgusting, selfish criminals. There is no reason to be afraid of these criminals. They can create spectacular attacks, such as 9/11, but they're like the Wizard of Oz. Their power is just an illusion. They're a small percentage of the population, and we can easily deal with them if we can just find enough people who can resist their offers of money, sex, drugs, and Hollywood jobs, and if we can just find enough people who are not so easily frightened. If the Zionists were truly talented, we would see evidence of their talent. Look at Israel. As I mentioned in my video, Silence of the Sheeple, there's no evidence that Israel is any better than any other nation. If the Zionists were truly better than the rest of us, we would see some evidence of it now that they've had decades to have their own nation. But there's no evidence that they're better than us because they're not better than us. There's no reason to be impressed by them, and there's no reason to be frightened of them. Look at some of the people who work for them. Alex Jones, Frank Weltner, Mike Piper, David Duke, Daryl Smith. These are not impressive people. A lot of their agents seem to be homosexuals, drug addicts, alcoholics, and other losers, misfits, and weirdos. Many of these people seem to be working for them only because of blackmail or bribery. This is not an intelligent organization of responsible, respectable people who will lead the human race to a better life. This is a group of selfish, psychotic criminals who are trying to manipulate us. Further evidence that they're not a very intelligent group is that they make lots of stupid mistakes, and that helps us understand how their network operates and who they are. I've been saying for the past couple of years that when a criminal tries to cover up his crime, he takes the risk of exposing more information about himself and his crime. Consider how much we've learned about them simply from their attempts to stop Christopher Bolin. For example, in 2006, Bolin was arrested for no apparent reason, and that exposed Victor Thorne, Lisa Giuliani, the American Free Press, and lots of other people. In 2007, when his trial was going on, a lot of people we weren't completely certain about showed absolutely no interest in the trial, but they showed tremendous interest in Ed and Elaine Brown and other suspicious people. That trial helped verify some of our suspicions that almost everybody in this truth movement is a Zionist agent. Then consider the mysterious disappearance of the Bolin family in June of 2007. That exposed even more people, some in Norway, some in Sweden, and some in America. Next, consider what we can learn from Daryl Smith. In September of 2007, Smith tried to intimidate me into attacking Bolin. That made me realize that he is also working with the Zionists. If the Zionists were truly intelligent, why would they be making so many stupid mistakes that expose them? And they're still making these stupid mistakes. On November 1, 2007, for example, Smith was interviewed by Charles Giuliani of the RBN radio network. When the conversation turned to the issue of how Americans are becoming more aware of 9/11 and Zionism, Smith made a very interesting remark. Listen to this.
Well, no question, a whopping percentage of the American public is waking up to that, and a whole lot of other things across the board. They don't have people fooled like they once did. So this thing is really, it's coming apart. And well, that's why they're moving at the speed that they are.
Well, you know, Charles, there is one thing I'd like to say here, though. There are a lot of Jewish people across America and Europe who are not part of this. They don't know anything about this stuff. What they would love, these bad guys would love nothing more than for all Jews to be blamed, and then they could call us hate mongers.
Sure.
But the
reality is, they're the ones that hate Jewish people. Right. That ongoing,
Smith made remarks like that many times during the past few years, and I assumed he was simply trying to prevent accusations that he was an anti-Semite who was blaming every Jew. However, now that I suspect him of being a Zionist agent, I have to wonder if these are truly disclaimers. I now wonder if he's an agent for a particular faction within the Zionist movement. However, my opinion on Smith won't make sense to you unless you first know how I currently look at Zionism. I see the Zionist network as a gigantic group. There are hundreds of organizations, many of which have branches. There is the World Zionist Organization, and they have branches all over the planet. And then there's the Jewish Defense League, Hadassah, B'nai B'rith, the ADL, and hundreds of other organizations. Who is in control of such a gigantic network? I don't think anybody is in control of it. I think all of these organizations are working for the same goal, which is to take over the world, but they're all operating independently. I don't think there's any single person in control of the entire network. There are people in control of Israel, there are people in control of the ADL, the Rothschilds are in control of their banking empire, but I don't think that the Zionist network as a whole has one person in control of it. I think these Zionist groups are competing with one another for dominance. They all share the same goal, but they don't have the same opinions on what to do if they do get control of the world. For example, some of them have religious fantasies of recreating Israel, but some of them consider Israel to be idiotic, and some of them are not even interested in religion. Daryl Smith, Mike Piper, Mark Glenn, David Duke, and a lot of other people are doing a tremendous amount of damage to the Zionist movement, and this confuses people. Why would Smith or Piper be willing to condemn Israel and Zionism if they're actually working with Zionists? I've mentioned one of the reasons in my other audio files and documents. Specifically, the Zionist agents must criticize Israel and Zionism, or they won't be able to attract the attention of those of us who are aware of these issues. But Smith's behavior brings up another reason that these people may be willing to criticize Zionism so severely, and that is because they worry that the Goyim are going to rebel against them. Imagine for a moment that the Goyim actually find some courage and demand that the people behind 9/11, the world wars, and other crimes be dealt with. A few years ago, the Zionists would have been able to shift all of the blame to George Bush, David Rockefeller, Tony Blair, and a few other people. But today, there are millions of people around the world who realize that Zionists are responsible. Therefore, some Zionists must be blamed. Which of the Zionists will get the blame, and which will be considered innocent? Smith's behavior provides more evidence that groups within the Zionist network are secretly preparing for the possibility that some Zionists are going to have to be sacrificed. These factions within the network are promoting their particular agents as investigators so that they can influence the decision regarding which Jews get blamed, what their fate is, and which Jews are considered innocent. These factions are probably not telling each other who their agents are, so the other Zionists were probably as surprised as you were to discover that Smith is a Zionist agent. There is a lot we can learn from Smith. If you recall from his radio shows, he often mentioned that he has lots of Jewish friends in New York City. In at least one of his shows, he mentioned his wonderful Jewish friend Ilana, or Elena, whatever her name was, whose family is involved in the gold and jewelry business. He said that she was the only person from America who traveled to France to be at his wedding with his second and current wife. Consider the possibility that Ilana and her family are Zionists. If so, they may also be friends with other Zionists in the gold and jewelry business. If you were one of them, wouldn't you want one of the 9/11 investigators to be a friend of yours? Now consider how this applies to Daryl Smith. He has mentioned many times during his radio shows that he has lots of Jewish friends. He also mentions over and over that most of the Jews are not involved with 9/11 or other crimes. If Smith can convince people that he's a leader in the research and exposure of Zionism and 9/11, then he may be able to protect his Jewish friends. He will tell us that he's analyzed the evidence, and he is determined that his Jewish friends are innocent. This theory would explain why the Zionist agents are fighting with each other to an incredible extent. Rick Siegel, for example, who is associated with that video 9/11 Eyewitness, and who is supposedly a relative of Bugsy Siegel, that Jewish criminal who helped create Las Vegas, is always fighting with everybody. There's also fights between Professor Stephen Jones and Morgan Reynolds. Years ago, a lot of us assumed that these fights were phony, that they were staged merely to create confusion. While that might explain some of their fights, Smith's behavior provides evidence that some of these fights could be because the Zionists are trying to determine which of them will get into a lifeboat and which of them will drown. Smith was probably told by his Jewish friends to attack Bolin, and later he was probably told to force me into attacking Bolin. But that was a big mistake because it exposed Smith. And it also shows that we not only have to investigate the investigators, we've got to check every one of their friends and associates going back for decades. We must investigate all of Smith's friends and his brother Scott and Scott's friends and his associates, such as Rick Adams. All of these so-called truth seekers may be Zionist agents who are trying to protect their particular friends within the Zionist network. The only solution to this problem is drown every one of these Zionist rats. Don't let any of them jump into a lifeboat. In the summer of 2004, I discovered that my half-sister seems to be married to one of Rupert Murdoch's children. This ought to make you wonder if I'm a 9/11 investigator simply to help protect the Murdoch family. Ever since I announced this on my website, people have been trying desperately to find a connection between me and the Murdochs, but so far they've failed, and they can't explain why I would have produced my book in 2002 to expose 9/11 if I'm actually working with a Zionist network. However, unlike Smith, Piper, and other people who keep secrets, I have no objection to people looking into me, my relatives, or the Murdochs. Actually, in addition to telling people to investigate everybody, I've been telling people to also look at people who contact me. I said years ago, I'm constantly being contacted by Zionist agents. Therefore, by looking at the people who contact me, you can identify other people in the network. Getting back to that interview with Charles Giuliani and Smith on November 1st, Smith was emphasizing once again that only a small number of Jews were involved with 9/11 and other crimes. But how does Smith know how many Jews are involved with these crimes? The Zionist network is worldwide and it's gigantic. Smith and these other so-called investigators are trying to convince us that only a small number of Jews are involved with crimes. But how do we know that? For all we know, half of all these Jews are involved with the crimes, or 75%, or even 90%. We're suckers if we let Smith tell us how many Jews are involved, or which Jews are involved. We should do our own investigation, and we should decide what to do with this Zionist movement, not them. We should stop letting Jews tell us what to think and what to do. Besides, for all we know, Smith is a Jew. One of the peculiar things about Smith is that ever since I've known him, he has tried to stop me from using the word Jew. There was one time I argued with Smith that the word Jew is a noun, and I even looked on the Internet Dictionary to tell him that it's a proper word according to the dictionaries, and therefore there's nothing wrong with using it. But Smith wouldn't agree with me. It's too bad I didn't record that conversation. Smith insisted that I use the expression Jewish people, or the Jewish community. What is wrong with calling a Jew a Jew? Imagine if you met a person who insisted that Christians be referred to as Christian people, or the Christian community. Or what would you think of a person insisted that atheists be referred to as atheist people, or the atheist community? Or how about people of the atheist persuasion? Perhaps the reason Smith is so sensitive to the word Jew is because he is a Jew. Another interesting aspect of that November 1st interview is when Smith had the nerve to promote one of Bolin's research articles. Listen to this.
And how they had just purchased Stewart Air Force Base north of New York City, and how they had Odie go...
Oh, I didn't know about the Stewart thing. Who purchased Stewart?
Stewart Air Force Base was purchased by the same people who bought, who made the deal for the World Trade Center. And
no,
it was set up by a guy
that.
Named Ronald Lauder.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because one of my pet theories has been that they landed the actual commercial airliners at Stewart and switched them with fake drones.
That's right.
I didn't know that. That was...
We put that out about 16 months ago, 15 months ago.
After threatening my life to criticize Bolin, Smith is proudly boasting about Bolin's research work. This is an example of what I said earlier about Bolin's work influencing people long after he's gone. Bolin's work is valuable, and now Smith is trying to use it to make himself look like a great researcher. Giuliani asked Smith where he could find that information about Stewart International Airport. So Smith was forced to admit that it came from Bolin. But if Giuliani had not asked, Smith never would have volunteered the information that he's using Bolin's work. On Friday, November 2nd, 2007, Smith was interviewing a man about the Columbine school shooting. Smith had no interest in this shooting when I interviewed Donna Taylor or when Christopher Bolin wrote about the incident, but now Smith is a Columbine shooting expert. And during that interview, he mentioned an interesting fact about Rahm Emanuel. Listen to this.
Well, you know that Rahm Emanuel, the guy that runs the Democrat Party, his brother is the agent for Michael Moore. And Rahm Emanuel's father was an Irgun assassin in Israel.
That information came from another of Christopher Bolin's research articles. However, in this case, Smith was not asked about the source of the information, so he didn't have to mention that it came from Bolin. Smith never researches anything. All of the real research is coming from me, Bolin, and a few other people. Smith, Mike Piper, Mark Glenn, and even Professor Stephen Jones are not really interested in researching or exposing 9/11 or the Apollo moon landing or the Holocaust. They're not really interested in eliminating Zionism. Instead, they're using our research to get your attention and fool you into thinking that they're the investigators and saviors. More evidence that Smith is a Zionist agent comes from Mike Piper's radio show on November 2, 2007. Piper insulted me and Bolin, as usual, but now he's praising Smith and claiming that Smith is no longer burdened by me. Why would Piper suddenly become a supporter of Smith? That Zionist message board, Wake Up From Your Slumber, also recently stopped criticizing Smith. All of this could be an indication that the Zionists didn't realize that Smith was a Zionist, and now that they realize it, they support him. Almost everybody in this so-called truth movement is turning out to be a Zionist. As I explained in my documents and in my audio file for October 7, 2007, we're not going to solve this Zionist problem unless we completely eliminate the entire Zionist network, and that includes their primary base of operations, Israel. Don't be fooled into thinking that Israel has a right to exist. That nation is a threat to the world, and we're fools to allow them to continue their secret and diabolical operations. Smith, Piper, and the other so-called truth seekers are trying to convince us that only a small number of Jews are responsible for 9/11 and other crimes. But if we follow their advice, most of the Zionist network and Israel will remain intact and functioning. The only way to stop Zionism is to help people realize that all Jews must be pushed away from any investigation of 9/11, Zionism, Israel, the Holocaust, the World Wars, the Armenian Genocide, and everything else. We are suckers to let Jews tell us about Jewish crimes, or let Jews tell us which Jews are innocent and which Jews are criminals. We, the Goyim, should decide what to do. We should take matters into our own hands. We're not helpless, and the Jews are not powerful, and they're not God's chosen people. We can beat these psychotic, miserable criminals. Well, that's my talk for today. Until the next time, bye.